This is Building Resilience Podcast, episode 202, The Emotional Bank Account.
Welcome to Building Resilience, a podcast where theory, practical strategies, and inspiring stories show you how to unlock your best life. I'm your host, Leah Davidson. As a certified life coach, speech language pathologist, and nervous system resilience expert, it is my mission to teach you how to be more resilient to life's adversities. I will show you how to manage your mind, befriend your nervous system, process your emotions, and even eliminate stress. It's time to do more than just survive. It's time to thrive. Let's get started.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Building Resilience Podcast. It is almost Halloween when this episode airs. I'm recording it early because I'll actually be out of the country when it airs. I'm working on some super fun things, which I, of course, will always share with you soon. But this episode is scheduled to air right before Halloween. And it's weird for me not to be home for Halloween. But since we're empty nesters, it's not really a big deal anymore. When my kids were younger, it was a huge deal. I mean, like, I had to take Halloween off. It was also a lot of work. We decorated our house a lot. We had gravestones on the front yard, and our kids each carved their own pumpkin. Then we always had mummy dogs for dinner, and our school made a really big deal about Halloween, too. They used to have this parade. I think they still have it, actually, through the neighborhood. So the kids would dress up, and in the afternoon, they had the parade. So I couldn't miss that parade, obviously. They usually came home for lunch. We would get them ready. Rob was amazing with some Halloween makeup, so he did some crazy faces over the years. And we always had hundreds of kids that came to our door. And we would sit out on the porch. This is what people do in our neighborhood. Or in the early years, one of us would take the kids around, the other would sit on the porch, and we usually switched out about halfway through. And then in the early years, our kids had to change homes halfway through to go to their other parents to do some trick-or-treating, which always seemed very silly to me because all their friends were in our area. But that was a complication of joint custody. These poor kids, once they were older, they could just stay at our home with their friends. And there are lots of great memories for Halloween. So as I was going down nostalgia lane, thinking about Halloween, I started to think of the different times with our kids and different situations that we ran into as our kids were getting older. And for some reason, something that popped in my mind that I remember talking to my kids about a lot is a concept that I want to share with you today, an emotional bank account. Have you ever heard of it? Now, I think it was first introduced by Stephen Covey. You know, I'm a huge fan of his. I've shared that before, pretty recently, actually, when I did that episode on living life with the L's. I believe he introduced the concept in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So he described it as a metaphor for the level of trust in a relationship. And just like a financial bank account, you can make deposits, words, behaviors, actions that build trust, and withdrawals, words, behaviors, and actions, all moments where trust is diminished. So some examples of what emotional deposits and withdrawals can look like in everyday life. So deposits can be things like words, like, I appreciate how thoughtful you are. Thank you for helping me. So a lot of words of appreciation and gratitude. Could be actions like giving your partner a hug after a long day or taking a few minutes to listen to their thoughts. And then behaviors like showing up on time or helping with tasks that they didn't ask for the help. I know for me, this is a huge one. Having integrity, being transparent, being the same in the light as in the dark is what I usually say. Or rather, not being who you are in the light, the same as being in the dark. Lacking transparency, lacking integrity. Any form of gaslighting is a huge withdrawal for me. Or breaking promises and not following through. Being dismissive can also be considered a withdrawal. And then words that are criticisms or indicate a lack of interest. These are all withdrawals. Sarcasm can even be seen as a withdrawal. Or ignoring somebody or pretending that something didn't happen. And it's not always about the big moments. It really is how we show up every day. So essentially, each deposit builds trust and connection, while each withdrawal chips away at it. And keeping an eye on this dynamic is really the key to maintaining a healthy emotional bank account. So the emotional bank account concept, I believe, was later then expanded upon by Dr. John Gottman, who brought this metaphor into his relationship research. Now, the Gottman Institute talks about it in terms of it being a partnership. But I used to talk to my kids about this idea of an emotional bank account because I think it's actually relevant for all relationships. So let's talk about what we're more likely to do in relationships when our emotional bank accounts are either positive or negative, and how this affects our different types of relationships, our marriages, our parent-child dynamics, friendships, and even work relationships. Because when the emotional bank account is positive, then we're more likely to do things like give the other person the benefit of the doubt, to approach conflicts with more patience and understanding, and engage in more acts of kindness, like doing favors without being asked or remembering small details about something in somebody's life. Now, in marriages or intimate relationships, this can translate to more affectionate gestures or a sense of being on the same team, on the same page, and quicker conflict resolution. If you're looking at a parent-child dynamic, kids will feel more secure and parents will be more patient when they're dealing with challenges. For friendships, it really means just better communication and less chance of taking things personally. And in a worker relationship, when our emotional bank account is on the positive, it leads to higher collaboration and trust. Now, when the emotional bank account is negative, then we tend to assume the worst intentions. We may think things like, they don't care, or they never listen to me, they never do that. We often will react to minor issues with frustration or irritation. We then can use more harsh wording, like, you always do this, really getting into that black and white thinking with our words as well. We will often withdraw from emotional engagement, avoid conversations, or we're just going to stay distant when the other person reaches out. And so this can show up in our intimate relationships, that a negative balance is going to lead to more arguments, distrust, and emotional disconnection. Within the relationship with a parent-child dynamic, it can definitely cause tension, and there could be rebellious behavior and an overall lack of communication. In friendships, a negative balance might create misunderstandings and resentment, and in work relationships, it can really result in passive-aggressive communication, a low morale, or avoidance of collaboration altogether. So the emotional bank account really highlights how consistent positive deposits build trust and safety and resilience, while too many withdrawals, especially when they're just left unaddressed, can lead to disconnection and conflict in all types of relationships. Even small disagreements can feel like huge obstacles, which will lead to even more misunderstanding and more disconnection when our emotional bank account is running low. Now, of course, I'm going to tie the nervous system into this. How does it come into play here? Well, remember, for our nervous system, it all comes down to safety. So a relationship with a healthy emotional bank account fosters a sense of safety, which helps us keep our nervous system regulated. When we feel safe and connected, our brain isn't on high alert. We're not constantly looking for threats. Instead, we feel calm and open, and we're able to engage. Now, when the emotional bank account is low or in the negative, our nervous system can get triggered. We become hypervigilant. We become defensive. And so then we're teetering all the time in this state of dysregulation. Then there's an added layer here involving neuroception. And you can go back and re-listen to the episode I did on that back in episode 125. So neuroception is a term coined by Dr. Stephen Porges. And it refers to how our nervous system is constantly scanning our environment for cues of safety or danger even before our conscious mind is aware. And it's happening all behind the scenes. And when our emotional bank account is running low, our nervous system can start to perceive neutral or even positive interactions as threats, leading to what's known as negative sentiment override. And this can trigger our stress response, making us more reactive, quicker to judge, and more likely to misinterpret our partner's words or actions. So, for example, something as simple as a delayed response to a text message might feel like a personal slight when our emotional bank account is depleted. Our nervous system interprets it as a threat, which leads to heightened conflict and harsher startups and conversations and overall disconnection, maybe some avoidance. But when the emotional bank account is in the black and we are doing well, our nervous system feels safer. And this activates positive sentiment override, where we're more likely to give others the benefit of the doubt, like I mentioned earlier, even during disagreements. So the nervous system stays calm in this state, allowing us to respond rather than react. And this buffer of this sort of emotional goodwill is built through small, everyday positive actions, and it will help us recover from conflict much more quickly, and we'll continue to keep our nervous system regulated. So when our emotional bank account is full, neuroception will signal safety, and we're able to approach challenges with more compassion and resilience. And in contrast, when it's low, neuroception will often detect threat, even when none exists, which will lead to more miscommunication and more stress levels. I've seen this in my own life many times. The level of my emotional bank account really flavors my nervous system and then impacts the lens through which I view everything. So let's talk about some practical tips that we can do to build up and maintain a positive emotional bank account. Now, the first tip I'm going to share with you is based on a concept that I used to talk about with my kids. It's not only that we need to make regular deposits into our relationships, but it's also important to understand what kind of currency the other person accepts in their bank account. This means figuring out what actions make your loved ones feel valued, because what feels like a deposit to you may not be one to them. So it's kind of like figuring out the love language. So you want to know what they consider big deposits and what they consider big withdrawals. For example, as I said, transparency and honesty and integrity is huge for me. I would way prefer not to like what you're saying or doing than have you say what you think I want to hear only to find out you weren't transparent. No, others may not care about that as much. You might think a grand gesture is adding to the bank account, but perhaps the person values everyday consistency of showing up. So you want to ask yourself the question, what makes this other person feel valued? Is it quality time, words of affirmation, acts of service? Just even knowing their currency helps make deposits that truly matter. And it is almost a type of currency. The more we know somebody and truly know somebody, we're making a deposit in their bank account. Now, tip number two is talking about this idea of making bids for connection. So a bid for connection is an attempt by somebody to gain attention or support from somebody else. It's often very subtle, and it can take the form of words or actions or gestures, and it's really signaling a desire for closeness. So responding positively to these bids will help build trust and connection, which adds to the emotional bank account. So an example could be like a verbal one is somebody asking like, how was your day? Or come look at this video. A nonverbal one could be something like somebody smiling at you, a touch on the arm, or maybe like a playful gesture. And then an action-based bid could be literally just asking for help or trying to initiate a conversation. Now, when we ignore or reject these bids, it can serve as an emotional withdrawal, which can lead to, again, disconnection. By turning towards these bids, instead of ignoring or dismissing them, you're actually making deposits into the emotional bank account. It's a simple practice, but it can be incredibly powerful. And this applies, again, to big moments and small, seemingly insignificant ones. Now, the third thing that you can do is you can practice daily appreciation. A small thank you, a kind word, a gesture of appreciation can go a long way in maintaining a positive emotional bank account. So look for opportunities every day to express gratitude. Gottman's research shows that couples who regularly make these small deposits have a higher trust and can handle conflict better. And it really isn't about grand gestures. It's about the small daily acts of kindness that accumulate over time. And I think this does apply in most relationships. I often say it's important to be mindful in expressing appreciation. Maybe we are expecting somebody to do something for us, and maybe they have offered it, and maybe it is part of their quote-unquote obligation. But we can also show appreciation. We can also say thank you for all the little things that go on during the day that somebody else is doing for us. Now, the fourth one is being mindful of withdrawals and the timing of a repair. We are going to make withdrawals. We are all going to make mistakes. It's inevitable. The key is to recognize when you're making withdrawal, or at least shortly after you've made the withdrawal, and then address it quickly. Some withdrawals, especially big ones like broken trust, are harder to recover from. But most can be fixed with genuine effort when we apologize and when we make a commitment to change. Now, the quicker you address it, the less damage it causes. And we've talked in the podcast before about how it's not necessarily the rupture that matters. We will always have ruptures. We will always make mistakes in our relationships. But it is the repair that matters. If no repair is made or attempted to be made, that can be an even bigger withdrawal. And the timing matters too, because if you wait too long, figuring, oh, it's just going to go away or be forgotten, this can also cause another withdrawal. Now, tip number five is we want to manage conflict with care. We all have moments where stress or conflict brings out the worst in us. And during these times, it's essential that we try to manage conflict with care. And Gottman has a famous 5-to-1 ratio that shows for every negative interaction, you need 5 positive ones to maintain a healthy emotional balance. So even when you're upset, even when you have conflict, we want to try to inject positivity. And that could just be through softening your tone or listening or validating that you see or hear somebody. And then tip number 6 is this idea of forgiveness and repair. Withdrawals are inevitable, like I said, but how we handle them does make a difference. The steps of forgiveness really do include acknowledging the wrongdoing, apologizing sincerely, and making an effort to rebuild trust. Now, this process helps not just the emotional bank account, but also keeps our nervous system from staying in that state of tension and stress. And here's something to remember about forgiveness. Forgiveness is the gift that we give ourselves. Sometimes we will get into a situation where somebody will make a withdrawal and there will be no request for repair and no request for forgiveness. So this can mean that further withdrawals or our bank account is just not going to grow. But we also have the power to decide on whether we are going to allow forgiveness into our hearts as a gift to ourselves. So building and maintaining a positive emotional bank account, it really does take intentional effort, but there's a big payoff. Not only does it create stronger, more resilient relationships, it really does nurture emotional safety, and it helps us keep our nervous system regulated. As we know, a calm and regulated nervous system is the key to building resilience in every single area of our life. So I want you to think about this. How can you make more deposits into your emotional bank accounts, whether it's with your partner, with your kids, or even your friends? And when withdrawals happen, how can you address them with grace and humility? That's what I have for you today. I hope that this episode resonated with you. If it did, then I would love it if you could share it with somebody who might need a reminder to check in on their emotional bank accounts. And have a great week, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Building Resilience Podcast. If you're interested in learning a little bit more about managing stress, building resilience, and leading a more purposeful life, then make sure we're connected on Instagram and Facebook at Leah Davidson Life Coaching. You can also subscribe to my weekly newsletter at www.leahdavidsonlifecoaching.com/newsletter. Looking forward to connecting.